According to this computer.
I'm just looking in Luke because that was our homework assignment.
Yes.
There.
Yes.
Okay. I had forgotten.
Okay. So I thought what we'd do, since it's been a few weeks, is just go back through everything we've done so far. No. just a quick where we've been. That's fine. Okay. So you saw that switch of screen, right, Linda and Barbara?
Yes.
Okay. So we spent the first week in Hebrews 11. I thought that would take two, but we got through that quick, which was good because we spent a year and a half in Romans. talking about being justified by faith. And then we spent just the 1 week, which again I thought we'd spend at least two, in James, talking about faith and works and how our works also justify us, because faith without works is dead. Oh, I should have brought, oh well. Okay, so today, and then today, we're going to talk about, there it is, increasing our faith. And that's from Luke 17 primarily, but there's also some other places that will come in. Whoops, jumping ahead a little bit. Okay, so let's go ahead and read Luke 17, 5 through 10. Somebody please.
In the time of Herod, the king of Judah, there was a priest named...
Luke 17, 5 through 10.
Oh, chapter 17?
Yeah, chapter 17.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Somebody else go ahead.
The apostle said to the Lord, increase our faith. But the Lord said, if you had faith the size of a mustard seed, you could say to this mulberry tree, be uprooted and be planted in the sea, and it would obey you. Now which of you, having a slave plowing or tending sheep, will say to him after he comes in from the field, come immediately and recline at the table to eat? Whoops. On the contrary, will he not say to him, prepare something for me to eat and properly clothe yourself and serve me while I eat and drink, and afterward you may eat and drink? He does not thank the slave because he did the things that were commanded, does he? So you too, when you do all the things which were commanded, you say, we are unworthy slaves. We have done only that which we ought to have done.
So, most people, for obvious reasons, will immediately want to go to the previous verses, because this is just randomly the apostle said. And so to most people it seems like a continuation of verses 1 through 4. So someone read verses 1 through 4 and let's see if we think that that verses 1 through 4 lead into verses 5 through 10.
I'll read. 17. Jesus said to the disciples...
Leslie Comstock.
Jesus said to the disciples, things that cause people to stumble are bound to come, but woe to anyone through whom they come. It would be better for them to be thrown into the sea with a millstone tied around their neck than to cause one of these little ones to stumble. So watch yourselves. If your brother or sister sins against you, rebuke them, and if they repent, forgive them. Even if the sin against you seven times in a day and seven times come back to you saying, I repent, you must forgive them.
Okay, so what do you think? Does verses 1 through 4 seem to tie in with verses 5 through 10?
I don't think so.
Okay. Anybody else?
I agree with you. There doesn't seem to be a connection to me.
I'm guessing there has to be a connection. I'm just trying to figure out what it is.
Why? Why does there have to be?
Well, because
you're tricking us.
I'm just opening the floor for discussion.
Jesus is continuing a conversation.
Yeah.
Is Jesus continuing conversation or are the apostles continuing conversation?
Well, he starts to his disciples.
Uh-huh.
And then they ask him a question, and so he goes there. But why would they come up with that question, increase our faith? He had just been talking about stumbling blocks. Maybe they are tempted by those stumbling blocks.
Okay.
And are unforgiving.
Or maybe they're struggling with the idea of having to forgive so many times And so they're asking, do I not have enough faith? Am I wrong because I don't want to continue to forgive?
Mm-hmm.
No?
That's actually the reason most people will give for the link, is they're wanting the faith to forgive. And if there is a link, that's it. I think, because there doesn't seem to be another one. I agree with you. I don't think they necessarily go together. But if there is going to be a way they go together, that's the way they go together. Because let's think about, again, what faith is in the Bible as a whole. What is faith?
Things we hear but cannot see, but we believe in. I can't remember the exact wording of that.
Well, faith is what it takes to believe in those things we cannot see. Okay. Yes. But then he goes on to talk about people who, by faith, did things. So there was at least two parts of faith that we talked about, that we discovered from the Bible. And we looked at various passages to go, oh, yeah, that seems like the one. Oh, yeah, that seems like the other. Yeah, that does seem like it could be both. So there was faith in what we're talking about so far, is that trusting in God. And that's because for our entire lives, for hundreds of years, that's where everybody's gone. Maybe 1,000 years or more. That's where everyone's gone in their brains with faith. Having faith in God. Trusting in God. Remember, there's another part of faith that's also a part of God, but also applies to us. What was it?
That which gives us confidence and the assurance.
Okay. So what about God would give us confidence and assurance that would make him this other thing, that part of faith?
He's faithful to us.
Faithful. That's the other part. God is faithful. Therefore, we can have confidence and assurance. We can have trust in him.
Exactly.
But we also need to be
faithful
to God. Like a husband and wife are to be faithful to one another. Like a employee, is to be faithful to their employer. But also the employer be faithful to the employee, that they don't put them in dangerous situations, that they pay them on time, that they get their benefits, whatever the agreed upon the agreements are in the contract. So if we think about the apostles and their question, increase our faith, grammar is one of those things that just over my head. So I'm not going to go into the Greek and try to get the grammar to tell what part is being talked about here. For me, I had to look at the context. Definitions I can do all day long. Context I can do all day long. But you ask me to participle this and pronoun that. And I still don't see how you can get plural from Hebrews 12. The church of the firstborn. I still don't see how you can get a plural out of that. Because it looks singular to me. Doesn't look plural.
Are we
but,
going there? Because
no, we're not.
Talking about. Okay.
So anyway, so we got to kind of go by the context here, what the apostles mean by increase our faith. So does it take trust in God to forgive a brother or a sister or a husband or a wife or a child or whoever infinite amount of times? Does that take trust in God?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I think it does.
Why do you think not? By the way, I think you're both right.
Well, I think because God tells you to forgive, that you make it in your mind to that you do forgive them,
mm-hmm.
or at least you don't hold it against them.
Okay.
So I don't know if that's faith in God. I guess it would be faith in God still, though.
Maybe, maybe not. Because...
like precepts of the law.
Go ahead, Linda.
No, I'm saying it's like precepts of the law. You know, you have confidence in God.
Well, and if you don't give forgiveness, you'll carry the resentment, so you destroy yourself.
Right. What do you think, Gloria? What do you say, yes?
Because I think if you don't have faith or you're not faithful to God, that concept is kind of lost on you. If you don't have the heart that we have and that we develop over our life, of being faithful to God.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it would be just a difficult thing, because if you're not faithful with without God in your life, you're more zoned in, or you're more concerned with the world and the things of the world in the world.
But also, how often do we expect God to forgive us?
Well, and that's the biggie.
It seems to me that this is Gloria, is hitting on it the way I read it too, and because having faith in God gives us permission to do this kind of thing, to be able to forgive people over and over and over and over again, instead of like in the world, if someone knew that you would continue to forgive, I continue to forgive Russ, in spite of the fact that he's done the same thing over and over and over again, they talk about what a fool I was. But if you know if God is in
or weak.
Or we
or yeah. Pushover, or yeah.
If God is in your corner, you have a faith that you can do that and be doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm. So, what does God say about us forgiving others? What did Jesus say about us forgiving others?
Over and over and over.
It's not here, actually. What, Linda?
Over and over and over again. You have to do it just. I mean,
yeah, but there was something.
If we don't forgive others, he's not going to forgive us.
That's right. There it is. The Sermon on the Mount. Yeah. If we don't forgive others, we won't be forgiven. So, on the
forgive
one hand.
As I would forgive you.
Huh?
Forgive others as.
Yes. Forgive us our transgressions as you forgive us.
Yeah.
Right.
And then he goes on to say, if you don't forgive, neither will you be forgiven.
Yeah, and the Lord's prayer.
Yeah. Exactly right. So, all those things tie together. So moving on to the apostles' question, increase our faith. Are they asking increase our trust in God? Are they asking increase our faithfulness to God? Or are they asking a combination of the two? Because remember, in Greek it's the same word. Just in the written, now remember they're speaking. So when they speak pistis, there's a verbal context, like if we just said trust, right? Within the verbal context would depend upon us what we mean by trust. Like when you talk about your family trust, that's not the same thing as I trust you to...
Say a good prayer.
Say a good prayer. Yeah, that's a good one. Those two very different contexts, right? But when the apostles are using this word pistis in Greek... What's the verbal context if we're looking at it in English? You know, we can't see it in Greek. We're blind to the verbal to the written context, just like Jesus was to the written context, because they didn't write Jesus a note with all the grammar and stuff, and then hand it to Jesus and there answer that. They were speaking, so we have to go by the context of the conversation, just like Jesus did, and that's why I started with verses 1-4. If verse 5 is a part of the verbal context, then that changes potentially the nature of their question. But if verse 5 is not a part of the first four verses, they're not a part of the same verbal context, then it stands on its own. We got to go purely by what's after. So let's think about, start now, and let's ignore verses 1-4 for now. We'll come back to those. And let's just think about verses Jesus' answer. First thing he says is what?
You have faith as small as a mustard seed.
Yeah. So let me go back to this and go back to this. There's a mustard seed. All mustard seeds around the world, there's very different varieties, of course, but they're all pretty much like that. That's probably an average-sized person's finger. So, you know, that's pretty itty-bitty, right? Small. So if you had the faith like a mustard seed, you would say to this mulberry tree, be uprooted and planted in the sea. Now, it's a whole different tree. This is a mustard tree in the Middle East. This is the only one I know is from the Middle East because of the dude standing in front of it. All the other mustard trees I found looked like regular trees.
They were pruned.
Yeah, whereas this is probably a wild mustard tree. Okay, so let's think about a seed. If you were to plant that, what would you expect to get?
Well, in my case, nothing.
If you knew what you were doing and planted that, what would you expect to get?
A big tree.
Wow, it's gross.
A mustard tree.
Yeah.
Right. Why would you not expect to get an apple tree?
You didn't plant that type of seed.
Yeah.
Okay, but I want an apple tree.
And you better plant an apple seed.
Yep.
So let's think about if you had the faith of a mustard seed. Does a mustard seed need faith in something else or someone else to become a mustard tree?
No.
But is a mustard seed faithful to become a mustard tree?
Yes.
Yep.
Now, does a mustard seed rely on anything else to become a mustard tree?
Elements, yeah. Sun, water.
Sun, water.
Singing.
No, that's never mind.
Right?
Singing, that's good.
Yeah.
That's what you're missing, doll.
Yeah.
But mustard seed being inanimate, doesn't have life like even a dog. Right. It can't have trust in rain or the person who planted it to pull weeds, to fertilize, etc. It's just a mustard. It will do what it does. And if it's not taken care of, it will die. But it has no ability to trust in the planter or the rain or the whatever. So let's take it to the, now you're the one who planted the mustard seed. You plant the mustard seed, you just leave it alone. It'll grow on its own. You don't need to do nothing else.
Not in Nevada.
No.
Not in most places.
Right.
In most places, you need to make sure it gets water. If you live in a place like Nevada, you can't rely on rainfall. You can't.
And you're better off if you fertilize it a little bit too.
Yes. And so the planter is preparing to plant the mustard seed or the apple tree or the cucumber or the leek or the whatever. And preparing the ground, preparing irrigation. Would it be nice to have rain?
Yeah, of
course.
So imagine you live in a place like Nevada, which the Middle East wasn't always like Nevada, like it is now. Because when Moses sent in the 12 spies, or when Joshua sent in the 12 spies, no, it was Moses. When Moses sent the 12 spies, they come back going, yeah, it's desert everywhere.
No.
They came out saying how lush the ground was. Yeah. They carried a cluster of grapes on a pole between them. Can you imagine a grape the size of your head? That's just amazing.
Yeah.
You know, nowadays we're told milk is bad for us, but what was the promised land flowing with?
Milk and honey.
Some of that happened just by nature. Some of it, stuff will grow on its own. But if you want a consistent crop, you've got to work the land.
Right.
But as the farmer, as the planter, you know if you take care of that, it's going to become a mustard tree. You know that. You have trust in that thing. As long as you are faithful to that,
yeah,
it will become what it's supposed to be. So there's kind of an interdependence.
Symbiotic.
Yeah, it really is. So now let's think about the example. If you had the faith, trust, or faithfulness of a mustard seed, think about the mustard seed. If you had that kind of faith or faithfulness, you would say to this mulberry tree, be uprooted and go be planted in the sea, and it would obey you.
That's like having no faith then, right? Because we just said a mustard seed doesn't have faith in anything. So if you had faith like a mustard seed, then you would have no faith. Am I right?
Well, now remember we have the flip side. We have faithfulness too. If you had the faithfulness of a mustard seed. Ah, now there's a whole different element here, right? I couldn't find one in Luke, but I know in Matthew, if we take Matthew and Luke somewhat chronologically together, this, where we're looking at, is in the last year of Jesus' life. He's working his way from Galilee toward Jerusalem. He's about to go into Jerusalem in chapter, I think it's 19? Yeah, 19. So he's on his way. In fact, I'm pretty sure he's on the, if you're looking at a map, here's Jerusalem, here's the Jordan, he's somewhere over here waiting to cross, to go head toward Jerusalem. So he's had a couple years with the apostles. And there's been a couple of times where some things has happened. Like the apostles were in a boat. And Jesus was asleep in the boat. And a storm came. And the apostles are freaking out. What's Jesus doing? sawn logs. And the apostles are freaking out. And, wake up, wake up, wake up. And he's like, what did he say?
You have little faith.
You have little faith. Now, in that circumstance, they are out of complete control over everything except what's in the boat. They can't control if some wave is going to come over, tip the boat. They can't control the waves. They can't control the rain. So they are completely reliant upon nature. Where is their lack of trust?
That Jesus can control nature.
That's right.
Okay, but Jesus is asleep.
Right.
And they're freaking out.
And it's really, you know, you can't expect, well, maybe you can't expect, but to me, I wouldn't expect a human being to have that constant faith. Like Jesus knows what he can do and mm-hmm. how he's going to do it. But an apostle, even if you believed in Jesus and Christ and following all his commandments and doing those things, your ability to face a catastrophe like that would be very difficult.
It is. And they're young guys, too. Yeah. They're in their early, mid-30s, late 20s, just like Jesus was.
Yeah.
I don't care what the movies say about Peter. They were all young. Every movie, Peter's an old guy while he's walking around with Jesus. Anyway.
Yeah, I agree.
Or a couple movies he's not. But, yeah.
But isn't it like, I just heard a gentleman today, and he found out he had cancer, and he's like, well, I'm okay with it. You know, right now I'm okay with it. It's the way it's going to be. And
sure.
So isn't that the response that these apostles should have had? Like, it's okay.
Sure. You know? But do you think the dude is not, do you think he's still not scared?
That dude's,
Okay. He's with Jesus.
He's saying that to you because he wants you to hear that. But if you really know inside, people that admit, say they have cancer, it isn't like you're calm and feeling good about it.
There's a difference there. So that's why I asked. Does it mean he's not scared?
No, it doesn't mean he's not scared, but he's okay with it.
Right, accepting.
He knows he's going to be okay because he's going to move.
Yeah, he's at peace with it.
I don't really buy that. I just don't think people are like that.
So I've known some people who they were still scared, but they relinquished, and the fear wasn't gone, but it's out of my control. I can only do what I can do.
I understand.
And there's a fine difference.
It,
yeah.
But being okay with it is a whole different thing.
Accepting being okay are kind of the same thing, because if you're okay with it, then you wouldn't try to overcome it.
Well, like if I break my leg, you know, I accept the fact that I broke my leg, but it ain't okay.
Right. Sure. Because then that's why you work to get healed and get walking again.
Yeah,
right.
Okay.
Yeah.
I still think.
And he probably like prayed.
Again, what, Linda?
I said he probably prayed a lot, and he just feel like he had that faith. He put that faith in God, and, you know, I mean, there's a lot of things that happen with me sometimes, and I just pray, and I say, okay, I'm going to leave it alone. Okay, I'm going to leave it alone. God, take care of it.
So now we're back to the apostles. Did the apostles have any reason to not be afraid?
Well, it's a frightening situation, but they had been with Christ for...
Sure. But he's asleep in the boat.
I know, but they knew they could wake him up.
But he's asleep in the boat, and they don't wake him up until they're really freaking out. And they're like, "How can you?" They're the way they're acting is, "How can you not be afraid?" And he's like, "What are you so afraid of?"
Right.
Now again, do they have a reason to be afraid?
Well, yeah, they could die.
Was Jesus afraid when he was in the garden praying?
It's different.
Yes.
Different for Jesus.
I believe he was.
Why?
Well, yeah, he was, because he was sweating and sad and not wanting and asking God to let him pass. Why is it different? Because Jesus knows what's going to happen to him. If he's crucified, he's got to go to be with God. It may be unpleasant to go through the process, but he's going to go to heaven and be in God's right. But the apostles, in spite of what everyone says, no one knows for sure they're going to go into heaven.
Sure.
We may say we do, but we don't know for sure.
Right. And the point, and but you're right, and that's the difference between Jesus. It's not just Jesus' knowledge of what was going to happen. Remember in Romans, we talked about Jesus' faithfulness to the Father, and that's not what, and people, Jesus having trust in God. Jesus didn't raise himself from the dead. He had to wait for the Father to raise him. Just like he's waiting for the Father to tell him, go get them now. Mm-hmm. The apostles are afraid, in the boat, in the storm, they're afraid in every sense. Not only are they afraid of dying, they're so afraid of dying that they're losing their minds.
There's more examples of that. Peter walking on the water is afraid whenever the storm.
That was the next one.
In the Garden of Gethsemane, when they're arresting Christ. There's a lot of examples of they're testing the faith of the apostles. Mm-hmm. And they are fallible.
Now let's go to the one with Peter. Boat, same lake. No storm, though. They're just going across. And the difference between the storm and Jesus walking on the water is Jesus was already awake. And Peter had eyes locked on Jesus. It was when he started looking around that he became afraid. And what did Jesus say?
Faith in Jesus.
He's the exact same thing. Because even though he had the target on, he became distracted and became fearful and started to go down. Whereas in the boat, there is just storm. There is nothing. Jesus is sleeping in the boat. And wake up. Don't you know we're about to die? And he says, you have little faith. So
Jesus had another advantage. He knows he can walk on water. So
sure. But Peter was doing it too.
For a brief time.
And depending on where you put that in chronology, they had been doing miracles right alongside with Jesus.
True.
So there's a lack of faith the apostles have that is different than the lack of faith that we would have. I agree with you. Very few people, when they die, are going to know for certain. Very few. I'm pretty sure you're going to be certain.
I don't know.
No. See? She's not certain. What about you? You certain?
Yep.
Okay, there's one. You?
I feel confident. I should say I have the confidence.
I believe if I'm obedient, then I have a place.
I'm leaning towards yes. I'm on the positive side.
Everybody knows 101%.
Everyone always wants to believe they're safe.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes down to it, everyone's like, well, I don't know, maybe not. But
it's not mine to judge.
Yeah.
People that I've spoken to, there's always that sense of doubt, not knowing for absolute sure that they haven't sinned and not been forgiven for it or not asked for forgiveness. And so.
Yeah.
But we shouldn't be that way.
Which way?
Maybe we shouldn't.
Which way?
We shouldn't doubt that because that's a lack of faith right there.
Right. And that's where we should be moving towards. And that's the whole point of all of this.
Okay.
We should be moving toward. That certainty, the assurance that we have. And the apostles not only they've done some miracles potentially by that point, by this point especially, I know for certain by this point.
And yet
they did not have faith. So, and remember what Jesus said about those who have seen him and believe versus those who never saw him and believe. What did he say about that?
Sorry, I was zoning.
So the apostles... Thomas sticks his hand in there. Lord, it is you. And Jesus says, you believe because you saw.
Right.
What does he say about those who believe and did not see?
Is it blessed are those? I can't remember.
Something like, how much more blessed are those who believe and yet have not seen?
Yeah.
So, in a lot of ways, we have an advantage over the apostles and over the 120 and over other people in Jesus' day who actually saw him. In some ways, we have an advantage. And Jesus says in that same part of the night, greater works will those who follow me do than I did. He's about us. We will do greater works than he did. Which, right? So now we're back to with the apostles. So they've been scolded a few times. You little faith people. Right? Like, Jesus is sleeping. Like, how many people when they wake up are like, you little faith? Or is it, oh, you little faith people?
He was upset with them several times.
Yeah, several times. So here, now they're like, okay, we've been scolded a few times. We have a lack of faith. increase our faith. Is what do we need to do to have our faith increased? And I'm suggesting it's not just their trust in the Father. By the way, in those situations like with the boat in the storm, it's not their lack of faith in Jesus. People always say that. Well, he's right there in the boat. How can they? Jesus is teaching us to have faith in the Father through him. It all goes back to the Father. So there, increase our faith, not to Jesus, to the Father. Because that's where the hierarchy begins. And so they're like, okay, fine. If you had the faith or faithfulness of a mustard seed, you could do these things. Now, they've done some miracles by now. But apparently they had not said to a mulberry tree, be uprooted and be planted in the sea.
And why would they?
Yeah. Right. Why would you do that? Right. Now, some people will, like one guy said, I think there's some wisdom to this. I really do. That the faithfulness to say to the mulberry tree, be uprooted and be planted, was, okay, tree, you're going to be moved. Here's my shovel, and I'm going to move you. Okay, there's some validity to that, because what did we just see about faith and works the last time we studied?
Yeah, the works should follow our faith.
Yes, but that's not what Jesus is saying. He's speaking of a miraculous thing. That's not going to apply to everybody. I don't care what anybody says. Not every believer in the New Testament could do miracles. It's not everybody. It was a lot of people, but not everybody. So, and not everybody can. Not everybody's gonna. Could there be some today who could? Sure, there could be. I don't know anybody.
I don't either.
That'd be neat to see on YouTube, right?
Sure. It'd be kind of cool to see a mustard tree move.
Yeah. So now let's think about the next parable. Which of you, having a slave, plowing or tending sheep, will say to him, when he's coming from the field, come immediately, sit down to eat. But will he not say to him, prepare something for me to eat, and properly clothe yourself, and serve me while I eat and drink, and afterward you may eat and drink? That's what normally happens, right? When you go to a restaurant and you order your food, you don't ask the waiter or waitress, have you eaten yet?
Unless you're Gene, and then you invite them to sit with you.
Okay. But normally people don't do that, right? Mm-hmm. It's the same with any... your bosses at work, teachers at school, they're not necessarily so concerned about what if you've had your meal when they're ready to eat theirs. Or if they need you to do something right now, they're not so concerned about you getting food. Now you feed me first, then you can eat. I wish there was a good picture of a slave. Slaves, like these are paid servants. They're taken care of and receive wages and stuff. Oh, you can't see that other one. There. They receive wages and stuff. But a slave, and that's what he says, not a servant, a slave. Would you having a slave who's been out working? He's been out working. What's the master been doing? Good job, slave. You missed a spot, slave.
That's it. Yeah.
What, Linda?
I said, that's it. He was just sitting on the front porch.
Yeah, drinking sweet tea. Maybe cracking that whip. Yeah. Go, slave. Yeah. He does, verse 9, he doesn't thank the slave because he does the things which are commanded. Does he? Does he? No, not usually.
My Bible says servant.
No, I know. Okay. I know. Some newer Bibles do because they're trying to lighten the mood or something else. There's different reasons why different Bibles do that.
Okay.
Like some people think the Israelites weren't really slaves in Egypt. Yeah, they were. It even talks about how harshly they were treated.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. So now a bond slave or a bond servant, that's a different thing. That's someone who bonds themselves to somebody.
For a period of time.
That's not here. This isn't a bond servant. This is a slave. Doesn't thank him. Nothing. Now, you know, we're a polite society. We go to restaurants, thank you, right? And we tip them. Mm-hmm. Even if they don't do so good, that's proper, expected. But when you have a slave, you don't thank the slave. So here's his answer, finally, about increasing your faith. So you too, when you do all things which are commanded you, say, we are unworthy slaves. We have only done that which we ought to have done. So his number one answer to increase our faith is, be like a mustard seed and be faithful. In everything that's expected of you, be faithful in it to the infinity degree. God says, do something, you do it. No questions, no harassments, no, well, what about like Moses? I can't go talk to Pharaoh. What am I going to do? Was Moses faithful in that circumstance? No, he was only faithful when Moses gave him, when God gave him a crutch, when he gave him Aaron. Moses and Aaron, it's almost every time, it's Moses and Aaron went, Moses and Aaron went, Moses and Aaron went. There's only a couple times Moses went by himself to see Pharaoh. But every time Moses and Aaron went, and Aaron was supposed to be the mouthpiece, who did the talking?
Moses
did the talking. He just needed that extra little bit of support. And then he became faithful. But we go. Go. If you need some support, get some support. Don't whine, don't complain, just go do it. Because if you don't, you are an unfaithful slave. And that's, now we have the parable of the talents. So here in verse 10, how we ought to think of ourselves, we're unworthy of the blessings that God has given us, of the commandments he's given us, and we're just doing what he's asked. That's like you used the word obey earlier. If I'm obedient, I know I'll be okay. A slave?
Which it's impossible to be, so yeah. We continually have to ask forgiveness because we're not ever going to be a saint.
Well, we are saints. That's another study entirely. But
we'll never be perfect. The only one that's perfect is Jesus, and then there's all the rest of us. We
sure.
will never reach that level.
But
we will strive to do so.
Yeah, in our own efforts, we'll never be perfect, but we're made perfect by God. It's a weird balancing act to learn, but So his first answer is be faithful in everything. His second answer is in your faithfulness, consider yourself unworthy in the faithfulness. I'm just doing what I'm supposed to do. That's all. All I'm doing is what I'm supposed to do. It's not on me. I'm just doing what I'm supposed to do. Because who should expect to get beaten? The slave that obeys or the slave that doesn't obey?
The disobedient slave.
The disobedient slave. Will an obedient slave sometimes get beat?
Yeah.
Sure.
Why?
Yeah.
Because the master is wicked?
Yeah.
But do we have a wicked master?
No.
No.
So why would a good master beat an obedient slave?
Say it again.
Why would a good master beat an obedient slave?
Other than that he's wicked.
If he's not wicked, he's a good master. He's not a wicked master. He's a good master. Why would a good master beat an obedient slave?
No idea.
To keep the slave obedient.
To keep the slave obedient?
Well, I agree
this
with
is
Glenn
what you're going
to
get
to
if you don't do more.
Yeah. To help, she said to teach them.
To teach
right.
them.
Yeah.
To make them more faithful. To make
exactly.
them more obedient.
Or more of an example, like to say,
or yeah.
Man,
right,
that
yeah.
guy, they beat
yeah,
him and he
line.
Does everything
yeah.
right.
Yeah, exactly right. But also, because the slave can take it. To make a point either to the other slaves or to perhaps his enemy, like Job.
Oh, to be still how powerful he is and he still has his fault.
Job was an obedient slave, and yet God still allowed him to be beat. Why? To prove a point to his enemy.
Right.
He will not deny me. He will do what I say no matter what you do to him, but you're not allowed to do these things to him. Because the master knew the limits of the slave. What the slave could take and what the slave could not take. Because he's a good master. To make us better. To make us, not to make us more obedient, but to make us more trusting in him. I know you're doing this for a good reason, master. I know you're doing it for a good reason, master. I lived in the South for a while, so I can do that. And you know, we sometimes assume that when we go through something bad, we've done something wrong. That's not necessarily true. Sometimes we're going through something to make us stronger. And sometimes we're going through something because that's just life.
See, somewhere, I can't remember where, but reading in the bottom of my readings, God does not test us. He allows us to be tested.
He doesn't tempt us to sin.
Okay.
Right. He, like Job. Job was tested, and you could say he was tempted to sin. I mean, his wife cursed God and die.
Yeah, Job did.
But he didn't. Was Job tempted?
No, he was tough.
But he was tempted not beyond what he was able to withstand. Because God is faithful, that God did not allow him to be tempted beyond what he was able to withstand. In the Bible, the words for tempted and tested are extremely similar.
Yeah.
And in English, to us, they are two different things. But in the Bible languages, they weren't so different. Tempted, tested, they're almost the same thing.
How come we don't know that Job could handle that at the time? I don't know why we said you said.
Well, we know because God put limits on Satan, and because Job never sinned. It's a conclusion that is drawn based on what we're told, not just in Job, but also in 1 Corinthians 10, verse 13. God is faithful and will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you're able to withstand.
But, well, because it's not, sometimes it feels like I'm getting more than I can stand. That's all. We don't know how he feels about it, though.
Right. Well, we also need to keep in mind this. Then there is this fourth option, is that sometimes we go through some things because of choices we make.
And that's for sure.
Yeah.
Because Job was in a lot of pain and had boils from head to toe, right?
Yep. He's an extreme example of God allowing his servant to be tested / tempted to prove a point to the enemy. He's an extreme case. None of us have gone through what Job has gone through. None of us.
Well, yeah, I understand that.
Yeah.
I was just curious. But because he didn't sin was what most of the reason is.
Yeah. In fact, I've got a lesson in my notes. Are you really like Job? Because people will say that. Oh, I must be just like Job then. Are you really like Job? Let's think about Job. Yeah. So,
sorry, I had to.
That's all right. No, it's a good question. Go ahead, Linda.
I feel when we're going through things like that, just keep praying, keep studying, and you know, you'll get that relief. You know, it's not that you did anything wrong, or that's the way I looked at it. When I had a certain thing I went through that my coworkers just decided that since I go to church, they were just going to try to torment me. But I just kept praying, and it all fell back. Everything worked out for me, and I thank the Lord for it. You know, you just can't give up. You just have to keep going.
Let's think about this, too. Let's use Job as an example. We're told in Job, in both chapter 1 and chapter 2 of Job, why Job was going through that. We're told that. Was Job told that?
No.
No. Job's friends give him, basically, they assume you did something. You did something. I didn't do nothing. Job didn't do anything. It could have been. Job didn't know if it. Now, Job does. He says, the Lord gives, the Lord takes away.
That's right.
He gave that credit to God. But he put his head down and he kept going. Because he didn't know. We never know. Is it God disciplining or making us stronger? Is it God allowing Satan? Is it Satan just doing his thing? Is it just life? Or is it some result of something I've done? Now, sometimes we know, well, I know that's why that happened. I mean, that was just stupid. I know why my foot hurts. That was stupid, right?
I know why I'm in jail.
Yeah. some things we can figure out, yeah, I made a bad choice. There's consequences. But other things?
Yeah, a young child dying.
And God, Scott getting God cancer,
yeah.
Josh dying,
right?
All kinds of things. There's all kinds of things.
And Job, by God, yeah. Too, right?
Lynn, I gotta work with you to turn your microphone volume up louder.
Oh,
I can't hear. I heard it a little bit with the first time, but then
no, it's your microphone. It's there's a setting in your Zoom app that you can turn the microphone louder so we can hear you better. Because I've got it pretty loud here.
Oh, there it is.
Yeah, if you can make that louder, that'd be super.
Can you hear me now?
That's the same. I'll come by the next week or so. We'll figure it out. Okay. Or I'll get on the phone with you or something. Or have Jason help you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, sure. We even get to the second part of Luke yet to get through all this. So basically, to increase our faith, number one, be more faithful. Just choose to be more faithful. And secondly, how the perspective we have towards ourselves and toward God. Because there's two things there. I'm an unworthy slave doing only what's been commanded. Right? So put ourselves in the right place. Paul says that later in Romans 12 about not thinking too higher of ourselves than we ought to think. People like me, that's a real temptation for us because someone even said that Sunday morning about me. I think it was in the pre-meeting, the pre-worship meeting. I think it was Tim who said, "Dan, you're back in the spotlight this week." And I didn't think about it at the time, but now I'm like, man, he didn't know my background. He doesn't know that's why I stayed out of the spotlight for so long, because I was in the spotlight for so long, I knew what it'd do to me. But I got old enough to where, let me give this a try. Maybe I can do this now. And sure enough, I matured enough to where I could do it. Some people should never be up there teaching, because they'll get a big head, and it'll ruin themselves and ruin others.
Yeah.
And so all of us need to constantly, no matter what part we have in the kingdom, no matter what part we think we have in the kingdom, I'm an unworthy slave doing only what's been asked of me. That's it.
And failing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes daily.
Yeah. So.
And what is asked of us is the things in the book, right?
Yes. Exactly right.
Yeah, you know, it's spelled out. We just got to do it. And that's the hard part, is mm-hmm. being able to do it.
Well, and do it with the right heart.
That's it.
True, yeah.
Because God talks to us through our heart, so we know when it's the right thing to do, and we need to do that.
Sure.
Sometimes things happen, though, they're unintentional. They just, you don't expect it, and you don't want it, and it happens, and then you think, oh, my goodness, here I go again.
Mm-hmm.
And so, asking forgiveness, yes, but still it happens.
So what has God asked of us? We've said it. What has God asked of us?
Faithful.
Work to be faithful.
Yeah, but what? What has he asked of us?
To love our neighbor as ourselves.
There it is.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Good job, Barbara.
Good answer.
I say that every time.
But that's the second commandment. What's the first commandment?
Love
God. And you, me, and Mike talked about what that means. What did you and Mike decide to figure out what that means? To love God.
We never really came to a final.
Oh, you didn't? Oh, I thought you did.
But listen, I'm going to read this. It's done for me. I'm going to read this, and I'll give it to you then.
Well, that's not on love. That's on the fear.
That's on fear.
Okay.
Oh, well, sorry. We finally, it was basically, if you are following commandments and allowing your light to shine so that people recognize what you're doing,
mm-hmm.
recognizing that you're a Christian, you're demonstrating that you love God.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't quite answer my question, but it gets closer to it.
I think it's on the right path.
Yeah.
Because what I've been thinking about it, and I think I figured it out.
Okay, tell me.
What does it mean to love our neighbor?
For
to what?
To be there for them.
In what way?
Helping them, encouraging them.
Watching their house.
For what purpose?
Glorifying God.
Yeah, but for the neighbor specifically, what's...
For just goodwill.
Yeah.
Being good to them so that they can deal with whatever...
So they get what they need in their best interest.
Yeah,
So now apply that very same thing to God.
Yeah, that's what I was saying.
Does God need anything from us?
No.
Yeah. We need everything from God. Right. But he's asked us to whatever we do in word or deed, do all
in his name.
In his name. in his best interest, glorifying God. And all that we say and do, due to the glory of God. That's in his best interest.
Yeah, that's kind of what I figured out after all my discussions with everybody.
Yeah, that's what I think it means.
And no one ever, I guess it was a strange question. No one ever seemed to have thought about that before or had an answer for it.
No, because in English, what does love mean? Oh, I love you, God. Yes, oh, I love you, God.
That's the problem. And
yeah.
God is a spirit. He's not a physical thing.
Yep.
And it's not an emotional reaction.
That's
it
right.
Shouldn't be. It should be a planned intellectual movement toward doing what is going to glorify God with your entire life.
Yeah, but I think there is some emotion involved in it. I agree with you, Betty, but
well,
there's emotion involved in it. Because
as long as we control the emotion, it doesn't control us.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
Do we do this by sharing yourself of, by the grace of God?
That's one way, absolutely.
I just share that with people. And
that's one way, yep. And do we actually have to say, I'm doing this for God's glory every time we do something?
No.
Never say that.
The motivation comes from here.
Right.
Now, if we're praised for something, well, thank you. I learned this from the Bible. I learned this from God. God expects me to be this way. And that's the kind of, we could do that. I know that's been a lot of people's minds to do things like that. To instead of saying, well, thank you, and taking the praise onto ourselves, to diverting it back to God. There's a whole other conversation involved with that, whether that's right or wrong. I think it depends on the context in which it's happening. Sometimes it's appropriate, sometimes it won't be. But as long as we know, God knows we know. And so we didn't get to the next one, which is Luke 18, 1 through...
You said 9 through 14.
9 through 14, yeah. but really, it really needs to be 1 through 14. It really does.
We got next Tuesday.
Yeah, we got next Tuesday. So next Tuesday we'll do Luke 18, 1 through 14. Because 1 through 8... is really kind of important to increasing our faith. It really kind of is.
You know, these discussions we have, and sometimes they get off track, but they really help me.
To get the words out of your mouth,
You
know, like to almost saying it out loud sometimes will help you to understand it yourself because you're saying it out loud.
Yep.
And then.
Well, it also fortifies.
And then.
It fortifies my thinking or changes my thinking, one of the two. When I have an input from all of you, and I have respect for this group, and so I hear things, and it makes me, challenges my thinking also.
Imagine if Randy had been here part of that.
It would have been great.
In fact, Randy, when you're listening to this, think of some thoughts to share to get started next week.
Yeah, there you go.
So, Russ, you want to say anything for her? Or? Okay, let's say prayer. Father in heaven, we thank you for this time together today. We thank you for these studies. As Bill just stated, they are the most encouraging parts of our week sometimes, that interaction, the bouncing things off one another and working through things together. I know it helps a lot of us, maybe all of us, and hopefully we can get more and more people to join this to get more and more interaction, but to not lose that closeness that we have in these smaller group studies. Be with Larry and Carol, Mike and Lisa. Not remembering anybody else right now, though. You know who they are, Father, and who we are thinking of and who needs your hand in their life, whether it's healing or guidance or a strike across the back. Give us what we need, Father, to make us more faithful to you. Father, increase our faith. Increase our faithfulness so that we can stand before you on that day. And as we take our last breaths here, we can be assured and we can have a confidence and assurance that the world doesn't understand, that maybe even we don't understand right now. Give us that, Father, so we can share that with others and do all things in your name. Through your son we pray. Amen.
Have a good afternoon, everybody.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye, Barbara.
Bye.
Bye.
So our plan is to visit with Carolyn
tomorrow, and I did.